From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Do you remember your very earliest gardening books, the ones that transported you into the world of plants, whether that was last year or years ago? Or other books that have earned a permanent spot on your bookshelf as old, trusted friends along the way? Kendrews and I got to talking on the phone about our favorite formative volumes the other day and decided we'd let you in on the conversation too. So more in a moment, but first, these messages.
Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com. Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. BrushwoodNursery.com.
My regular alter ego, Ken Drews, needs no introduction, but he is, of course, the author of not a small number of gardening books himself, 20 at last count, including some I know changed the way I look at plants. He's back today to take a stroll through our mutual garden bookshelves. Hi, Ken. How are you?
Hi, Margaret. I'm your alter ego?
Yes, I think so. I've decided. Mm-hmm. Oh, some days I'm you. I'm you.
I thought that I was like Clark Kent and you're super person.
Oh, huh.
Or okay. Vice versa.
Well, maybe we should get a couples therapist and see what they have to say about that.
What's your take on capes? No, okay, books.
Okay, books. So I think what we should do is have a giveaway with the transcript of the show over on waytogarden.com of one of the books, but I don't think we know yet until we chat which one it's going to be, so we'll tell that with the transcript, but there will be a book giveaway of one of these goodies. So do you remember your first sort of gateway books into this world where you and I have spent more decades than we make here?
I've been asked this question many times.
Oh.
And the first book that comes to mind is, I know, it's probably the first book that comes to mind for you too, because it's seminal. And it's The Principles of Gardening by Hugh Johnson.
Oh, yes. It's a very unusual book.
Well, he's mostly known as a wine author, writer, and blogger now, too. He's still doing it. But this book contains mostly two-page color spreads on all sorts of aspects of gardening with short texts, big captions, and photos. You know, the Dorling Kindersley books kind of, this was the progenitor in some ways. But there's photos and drawings and paintings from history of gardening to greenhouses to wind and rain to gardens around the world to landscape history to plant families and names to alpines and hedges. You know, it's just everything. Perennials, trees, color, design. And they're all in these bites that are 2 to 4 pages. And it's a turn-on, but it's also, well, you know, he has history on landscape architecture and William Kent. You just learn so much, but it's so easily to digest. And someone like me who likes nonfiction and doesn't read so well, it's perfect.
The book is so different from the table of contents of a first gardening book that you would expect. So it doesn't have like perennials. I mean, it does have perennials, but it doesn't have like, or chapters like spring, fall, summer, winter. You know, it's not traditional in its organization. But you're just transported into all these different, as you said, these different ways of looking at and connecting really to the garden, you know, through the weather. And, you know, so it's not like sections like spinach, how to grow spinach or how to grow tomatoes. Do you know what I mean? And it's like historical examples of different cultures and history, how they've, you know, related to the garden. And I mean, it's really a must. I think it first came out in 79 and then was revised in 96 or 97. So there's old copies out there. But it's a must. It goes on both our lists, right?
Absolutely. Well, I don't know about your list, but definitely. It probably does.
So that was one of your early books.
Yeah.
I mean, I think quite a different kind of book and more traditional structure and so forth that would be right around the same time, maybe a couple of years earlier, was James Underwood Crockett's Crockett's Victory Garden. And we've talked about that probably in the past. I mention it a lot because it was my first how-to book. But it's outdated because, you know, things are different now. Chemicals that he used and so forth, we wouldn't do a lot of those things. But the idea of looking at the garden through all the seasons is still very important. And
when gardening was actually on television.
Yes, remember. Mm-hmm. So what else was early for you in the formative, Ken Drew's formative?
Well, I think in the earliest days, I was into indoor gardening when that was in its back. Now people are doing that again, but
yeah.
I started indoors in an apartment. And I think one of the earliest books, the first books was Garden in Your House by Ernesta Drinker Ballard. And it's a black and white book with photos by her husband, Fred. And it's arranged in exposures. So there's plants for north, east, west, and south-facing windows.
Oh.
And I just read it and reread it and reread it. And that reminds me of kind of a plant porn book, Exotic Plant Manual by Alfred Bird Graff, which is a reference book. Do you know that book?
I have seen the book. I don't own the book. I don't own either of those two books, actually. Huh.
I would spend hours with the black and white Exotic Plant Manual. I don't know. It weighs about 4 pounds. And I just would look at the plants and look at the plants. The plants for greenhouses, windows, and warm climates outdoors, and how to grow them, and some description of what they're like. And then a small version came out of that. And then a big version came out called Exotica. And then a big version in color came out called Tropica. But
right.
The Exotic Plant Manual is, I don't know how I could do it. I would look at that for really, actually, hours over and over and learning so much.
Interesting, because Exotica and Tropica, the later sort of iterations, I have both of those, but I don't think I have the original. Yeah. And it is, it's really, well, and I think those titles, I think actually the title Exotica really describes that sort of genre of book. It's perfect for that, those books, right? Because it's like you're saying, you're like transported and you couldn't close the original one. It's like you just kept looking and looking at all these exotic creatures and wanting to learn more about them and where they came from and so on and so forth. Early on I got some houseplant books too, and I still have them on my shelves, especially Thalassa Crusoe. She was British born but lived in the US, and I think she didn't she make that? Yeah, it was a public TV for WGBH in Boston. She had a show, Making Things Grow. And was she on like Johnny Carson or something?
She was on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. I didn't see those originally. And I'll bet you can still find them on YouTube. I wouldn't be surprised, because they were kind of funny. And, you know, it was like the cooking things where she would try to do something and he'd be making faces in the background. But she was a very good sport.
And
that book, she would have sort of projects. You know, so it would be indoor plants, but it would be how to make an indoor plant tower.
You know, right, what I mean? Right. Aspirational. Yeah, I bet hers was one of my first. Crockett had an indoor garden book. I think it was just called like Crockett's Indoor Garden or something like that. Book two. But Thalassa Crusoe's would have been one of my others and early. My earliest books, when I started thinking about making a garden outdoors, not just having houseplants, were kind of like hippie dreams and back to the land focused, you know, and they weren't horticulture exactly. Like, and I still have my copies of these, which were vintage even at the time. Was it called 5 Acres in Independence, which was a 1940 book by someone named M.G. Cain. And, you know, it was again like a back to the land Bible. And then Helen and Scott Nearings in the 1950s, wrote Living the Good Life.
Right.
You know, they were in Vermont and then eventually to Maine. And, you know, they were an inspiration for so many people that I've met over the years, including Elliot Coleman, you know, the great organic farmer and inspiration to the an entire generation since. They inspired him. So the Good Life series of books, especially Living the Good Life, you know, I don't know. I just, you know, I wanted to like learn to can and put up my food and, you know, grow my own. And, you know, it just, again, it was like aspirational in a way. And I guess that's why, that's what led me not to have a garden in the city where I grew up or even on Long Island at the beachfront or whatever, but to come to a rural place. Mm-hmm. I think it was really those books that directed me north into the Hudson Valley, Berkshires area, you know what I mean? Into a rural setting were books like those. And then, of course, Ruth Stout. Did you ever read any Ruth Stout books, speaking of 1950s?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, when you're saying that, I always think of The Bales of Hay. When you say,
I know. what she would call mulch gardening, meaning throw it all down on the ground, like piling it. I think they ended up calling that like recently, like lasagna gardening, and in farming they call it sheet mulching sometimes. But she just would like pile stuff up to suppress the weeds and tease it back and plant in between it. And yeah, I mean, and the thing about that and about the sort of hippier books is they hold up because, again, the chemical thing, they never used chemicals. Mm-hmm. It was sort of organic gardening before we talked about it exactly that way. And so whereas some of the, as I said before, the Crockett stuff and so forth, it feels a little wrong because it's a lot of times about a chemical intervention. So these more natural, sustainable, et cetera, books kind of hold up technically, even though they're funky and funny and obviously from another period, you know. Again, they were even vintage when I read them or you read them. But yeah, Ruth Stout definitely had, her books were like How to Have a Green Thumb Without an Aching Back. I think that was one title, and Gardening Without Work. And she gardened in Connecticut. And anyway, she was born in Kansas. She gardened in Connecticut. But, you know, she's definitely was a pioneer of, I don't know, I just loved her. I love her. So I could still read those books.
Well, those books, which are kind of general advice, the thing about these old books that bugs me is that the plant names have all changed so much.
I know.
That's one thing about old books, right?
Right. I next dipped into a British phase because I think when you and I were really starting to garden keenly and became garden writers around that time, we Americans all look to the British for our inspiration. Like mm-hmm. it was, you know what I mean? They were/are, I mean, you know, they were those that you look to for inspiration. Leave it.
Well,
at
they
that.
Just had been doing it a whole lot longer.
Right.
And there were a whole lot more, and they have so much more forgiving weather and great soil and temperatures, just wonderful, and long hours of daylight in the summer. So it's right. Not really fair, but, you know, just like everything, when you say a house is old here, it's like 1840. And when you say a house is old there, it's like 1610.
Right.
Or something.
Right.
I've just been doing all that stuff so much longer.
Right. So we mentioned Hugh Johnson. We mentioned his Principles of Gardening already, yeah?
Oh, yeah. I don't even think of that in that same group, but yes.
No, I know. But I'm just saying I was just mm-hmm. going to bring up the idea of British books from people from the UK. And in preparing to talk to you today, you know, I found that he's at 81. He's still blogging.
Right.
He has a Trads Diary, TRADS diary.com from Tradescant, or like Tradescantia, the plant. It's the Tradescant's diary. Anyway, tradsdiary.com. And so he's definitely one, but many others. I mean, obviously, early on, I read vintage books by, you know, Gertrude Jekyll and so right. on and so forth. William Robinson, who's Irish, not English, but William Robinson, yes.
William Robinson, well, he did a book that was very popular called The English Flower Garden, I believe. But I had a book called The Wild Garden
yes.
by him before that. And when we hear the word wild, we think native. But wild, in this case, is naturalistic. And he encouraged naturalizing plants. But he would show fields of daffodils. And there is one native daffodil to Great Britain. So it's different. But mm-hmm. that book was just that whole style. Just think how that influenced American gardening.
Yes.
Even to this minute.
Yes. So, and the wild garden kind of, it's credited with like leading to sort of the popularizing of the style of cottage gardening, you know, looser, not the formal within parterres of boxwood, putting your flowering plants inside the rigid, you know, it was like getting away from that. And he was a big critic of that formality, yeah, really. Very,
it's a backlash.
Yeah, yeah. And so by sort of loosening it up, then the cottage garden style, I believe, you know, became more popular.
People don't even know what bedding is now. You say bedding out and
bedding schemes,
or
right?
Carpet bedding. People don't. Americans don't know what that is.
Right. So that sort of formal stretches of color within, usually sort of geometric or, you know, shaped, again like boxwood and so forth, parterres, and yeah.
Mostly annuals too.
Yes. Lots and lots of color.
That's a really long story, because Great Britain colonized all these places that had annuals, and then they could make greenhouses inexpensively for the middle class. You know, it's a big, long story. And then William Robbins said, the heck with this.
Right.
Loosen it up, baby.
And he was very influential in garden writing, garden journalism, not just his own writing, but he started The Garden magazine and Gardening Illustrated, another magazine. You know, he founded a couple of gardening magazines, etc. So he was, I highly recommend The Wild Garden as a book to read. And when he, with his success, he ended up buying Gravetye Manor, which was another, you know, English home of note and so forth. So lots to learn, I think, even now from his books. I think that The Wild Garden, I think it was written in like 1870 when he was in his 30s or something. So it's, you know, an oldie. What about Marjorie Fish? Did you read any of her books?
I was going to just say that Gertrude Jekyll was his disciple.
Oh, it was Robinson's, right.
She wrote for his magazines, and her book, like Wood and Garden, her books were enormously popular, and she was still incredibly popular. But anyway, she worshipped at his feet until they probably had a fight over some sentence or two. Sorry, now where were you going?
I was just going to say, did you ever read any books by Marjorie Fish, more contemporary?
Yes, I think I had her Shade Garden book. I remember reading her was, you know, they say these things like having a friend in the garden.
Yes.
It's really like having a friend in the garden.
Yes. Yes. She, Marjorie Fish, so like the book of hers that I love and recommend, and I think it was reissued maybe 2002 or something. I think as recently as that. It's this tiny little book, and it's called We Made a Garden. And apparently her working title, which I love this, was Gardening with Walter being her husband. And basically it's like between the plantsmanship and the inspiration that you get from reading it, but also the like, you're not putting that over here.
Yes, I am.
No, you're not. You know what I mean? But her publisher said, I'm sorry, nobody will buy a book called Gardening with Walter. So they called it We Made a Garden.
I think that's a better title, actually.
Yeah.
Not as funny.
I know. But anyway, but Marjorie Fish, I love her. And maybe that's one of the ones we should give away, because it is, again, it's been reissued and it's out and so forth. Any others you want to share?
Well, you're mentioning a husband and wife team, and that makes me think of when I lived in Rhode Island. But I had a book that was, everybody had this book, America's Garden Book, the only book you'll ever need to plan, design, and grow your garden, by Louise and James Bush Brown. People call it Bush Brown.
They call it Bush Brown, yes.
And that was a general book on just about everything in black and white. Mine copy was black and white. I don't know if it's been reissued with color, but it had, you know, hedges, paths, things like that, in a very digestible way and very thorough.
I bet you read Green Thoughts by Eleanor Perenyi.
It's funny. I just was talking to someone about that book, and I can't remember who it was, but we both agreed that it was the right book at that time.
I think it was like 80-ish or 81, or is that right? Something
is
around
that
there.
Really that long ago, huh?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was 81. And it's just 72 little essays. Some of them are half a page. Some of them are 2 pages long, strung together alphabetically. You know what I mean? So it could be, you know, T is for trowel and P is for petunia, whatever. It's just, it's, those are not necessarily two of them, but it's idiosyncratic. It's not linear. So
I'm sure P was for peony.
Maybe. Yeah, it was called Green Thoughts for Eleanor Frenney. That's another one that's been reissued repeatedly. But the cultural stuff doesn't hold up for me because, again, the recommended ways of feeding plants and dealing with pests and so forth seem so out of date, or they are so out of date.
Yeah, well, you're right.
So any others in the last few minutes that you want to share that are you are keeping on the shelf?
Keeping on the shelf. Why do I have Wyman's Encyclopedia?
me too, honey. I have it too. And it's a one volume. It looks like a thick dictionary kind of a book. And that's what it is like. It's alphabetical, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You can look up each entry, pruning or whatever, or a name of a Latin name of a plant.
And I have Hortus Third, which I haven't touched for years, and probably all the names are wrong in that. But we used to go to that for plant names.
Right. And now I go to theplantlist.org, which is the multiple botanical institutions around the world collaborating on the latest Latin taxonomic correctness and what's named what and what's a synonym of what. So now we do it online. I don't even have a book for it.
You know, you were talking about Thalassa crusoe, and I was thinking she was like the Julia Child of indoor gardening.
That's well put. Yes, yes, yes.
Later, I would say on my reference list would be Michael Durr's Manual of Woody Plants, which is an enormously popular book.
Yes.
Lucky him, right?
Yes, and it's been updated and so on and so forth. And yeah. But it's a reference book. It's not a read from page one to page whatever. It's a reference book. I use it as a reference book.
Although you could read it from page to page. And it has so much in it. And it seems to be every student, especially even kids who go to school for landscaping, they get that book.
Yeah. So do you have one more that you want to tell us before we bid adieu?
Well, I guess in a way I might say Noah's Garden by Sarah Stein, which also many years later. But that really changed a lot of things.
Speaking of loosening us up and making us look differently at, you know, yeah. So, speaking of Wilder,
right. Well, she wrote a book called My Weeds, I think.
Yeah.
And then she got religion and she realized that, wait a minute, I don't want to just let everything grow that wants to grow. I want to make it local and indigenous and native and she did. And we were promoting native plants. And now that's not even outrageous.
No. Well, Ken Drews, we've used up another segment. It's good. I'm going to go dig through my bookcase and put some on the bedside table. So thank you for reminding me of some of these, because some of them, like Marjorie Fish, is going to get another read. So thank you. And I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Okay, great. Thank you.
Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. BrushwoodNursery.com. Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com.
And I'll talk to all the rest of you again soon, I hope, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or iTunes or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. Happy gardening and reading about gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.